Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Luff and it's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. Wendy, you've known Steve Cochran about as long as I have.
Yeah.
I think he genuinely feels bad for what he's done today.
Well, I do too. Here's why, because you keep bringing it up. Like, let me liken it to if I buy a new pair of shoes and I love them, mm-hmm. then that's all good. I don't ask anyone's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm iffy on it, that's when I say to Jim, do you like these shoes?
Oh.
Because if you second guess yourself
right.
and need someone else's opinion on what
right.
you've done or purchased,
right.
then you're not sure of
that's
it.
That's true, isn't
so
it?
So he kept like, bringing it up.
Those shoes look great on you, by the way.
Thank you. I didn't need advice on these.
But he, for those of you who don't know, and I'm not going to give away too many details, he shared something with the listening audience that many people in the listening audience did not want to hear. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, but who leaked that? That's just sucky.
Right.
That's all I can say.
Agreed.
I mean,
agreed.
The show's on at 3:30 today. If you
don't give away too much.
You just totally did.
No, I didn't. No, the show's on at 3:30. You can watch. That's what I'm going to be doing.
What else is on? Reading Rainbow?
I'd watch that, too.
Judge Judy, maybe.
Don't ruin Judge Judy for us, please.
I just, you know, how does this stuff get leaked? I know social media, but sometimes you can avoid things.
Because yeah, don't they sign something? Everybody involved? Don't
everybody
they have
involved
to sign
did.
Something?
Well, they have studio audiences and all of that, too.
Yeah, but didn't things happen a while ago? Why didn't we know then?
I don't want to say anything because I think
God.
Just in reiterating it, we may have already crossed the line.
It's already out there.
But
dang
do you think
no, let's
just, people like to be the first person to know something? You
didn't
know,
you have even a relative who would always call.
Everyone
if someone
in my mom's family, they play a game where whenever somebody in the family dies, my mom's side of the family love this.
Did you hear?
They would call up. You know, Martha's dead.
I don't like to be that person.
No, I don't want to be that person either. But you know how people like, and you've done this when you get alerts. It's like, oh, now, hey, I know I may be the first person in the room to know something, you know. And everybody likes to have that ability sometimes.
I didn't get any alerts.
On this one?
Yeah.
Well, because this one really doesn't fall under the earth-shattering, I mean, for the world of pop culture, it's a big deal. But in the general scheme of things.
It's a pretty big news story.
It is.
You're totally perpetuating the error here.
Well, that's why I want to say we should all as a group just stop listening to Steve Cochran in the morning because this has got to stop.
I stopped. I heard little inklings of things
hey,
when
wait
he was
a minute.
Talking
I'm on
to Dean.
Mary,
I only tuned in for Mary's traffic.
Mary, what time exactly are the traffic reports? Because that's warranted.
Well, that's a good question.
All right. Sometimes we're a little behind schedule.
Yeah.
Do you remember years ago? I don't know if you'll remember this at all. The movie The Sixth Sense came out. And for those of you who don't know, it has
yep.
kind of a surprise ending,
yep.
kind of.
Spoiler alert.
And there was a columnist here in town who ruined it in his column. Do you remember this?
I vaguely. Did we talk to this person?
It was Irv Kupsnet, yes. So you and I were doing mornings at Q101, and in Cup's column, which I read every day to find out if it was Peter Falk's birthday or not. Birthdaying Peter Falk, 82.
Careful.
Peter Falk.
Ageless.
So, ageless and priceless. So I said, boy, if you didn't see Sixth Sense, because at that point it was out 3 weeks, right? And he said, audience are still shocked at the end of Sixth Sense to find out that. And he said exactly what happens at the end of Sixth Sense. And I said, well, you can't. How can you be a responsible journalist and put the end of a movie like that? So you said, well, we should call him. And I go, well, Irv Kupsnet doesn't just pick up. When you call Irv Kupsnet, you get his assistant, Stella, or you get his answering machine. You don't get Irv Kupsnet. So we called him on the air. Hello? He picked right up. So then you
God,
pointed
we
at me like,
good.
take it. And I go, Mr. Kupsnet, with all due respect, in today's column, you put the end of a movie, and he got very surly. And he said, well, that's up to me, isn't it? And I go, well, it is. But there's a lot of people who are anxious to see the movie, and you put the end of the movie. And I said, well, that's the point of the story, is to say that audiences were shocked. And I go, well, now they won't be, thanks to you. Then no one's going to be shocked. You just printed the end of the movie.
Well, are you sure that wasn't Crying Game? Because I know somebody did it with that,
no,
too.
No, it was Sixth Sense.
God, I don't remember us doing that. We
yeah.
used to be
no,
really
remember
good,
in
didn't
Sixth
we?
Sense? Remember that? It ended where he was a woman.
Right. It was a shocking ending. That's absolutely right.
I know I was talking to Vivian off the air, and, you know, things...
Steve's new producer.
Things get spoiled much quicker these days.
Thanks but to the internet.
I got to tell you, I didn't know.
Right. Right.
I didn't know things.
But if you were around the internet with any regularity as the day went on,
well, yes,
you would probably be privy to the information.
But I would have kept it to myself.
But now, on Steve's side, it seems almost irresponsible if there's a major story, because this is in the world of show business.
You just said it wasn't major enough to get an alert.
In the world of show business, it's a big deal, right? So then the next day, people would go, hey, you knew this and you didn't talk about it at all? How did that play out?
Well, that's when you say we are polite.
Yes.
And we waited till everyone had... I'm done talking, because we are ruining it even more.
No, I know. All right.
But although it's ruined for us, so let's ruin it for everybody. That's how I feel.
No. No. That's horrible. That's horrible.
That's just what happens these days.
But now, when you read a story, don't you want to wait a minute or two first to see if it's accurate? Because there's a chance this is an inaccurate story.
There is?
Yeah. Isn't it? Isn't there?
I told you, honest to God, I tuned out. I didn't want to hear anything.
Somebody could have leaked this incorrectly. Possibly, I'm hoping.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. That would be awesome sauce.
It's not April 1st.
Right. Right.
I like that.
A man named Ken Jennings could have just, as a joke.
Now, come on. I thought we weren't going to do any of this.
All right, we shouldn't. You're right.
But I'll say this, though. This is going to be...
Right. This will be the last...
It's hard to stop yourself, isn't it?
Well, I think this is going to be a real boost for ratings.
Right.
We've already ruined it. We should have just left it on the Cochrane Show where it belonged.
Yeah. We can ruin our own things.
We've already ruined things. Yeah. We've been bad. Yeah. We have to go sit in each corner.
We'll go stand in the corner for the rest of the show. All right.
Darn us.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a break.
And then we're finished.
And
okay?
Then no more show. Wendy, Todd Simon joins us right now, fifth generation owner of Omaha Steaks. We have talked to Todd in the past. Todd, the timing on this couldn't be more perfect. Here's why. Last night, a huge barbecue at my house. All my family, all my wife's family, some friends, we all came out. We served up Omaha Steaks. We grilled them. The one thing everybody agreed on all night long, best steaks we ever had.
Well, thank you for saying so. I did the same thing. I had a whole group over, and it was really the beginning of summer because the weather's been cold. And now that things have warmed up, it was just an amazing time. We had about, 12 adults and 10 kids. It was a madhouse.
Something for everybody. The one thing, now I have to ask you exactly what this is. Almost everybody went with steaks, but I went with, there's this chicken you guys put out that's kind of like a pounded chicken. It's lightly breaded. What is that exactly?
So we've got a chicken fried chicken. That might be what you're talking about. It's kind of a delicious breaded tender breast of chicken. And we're also, I don't know if you had it yet, but we're also going to be offering like an airline chicken breast, you know, which is the old style chicken breast with the little bone coming out of it.
The airline chicken?
A throwback.
Oh, that's the one I ate, and then I was in Seattle at the end of it, and I have no idea how I got there.
Well, you know, we are talking about steaks for Father's Day because, you know, Dad loves steak, and as you know, Dad is also the de facto king of the grill, although my wife does get in front of the grill from time to time.
Well, I'm the griller, and I have to tell you, Bill shared this year his Omaha Steaks with me.
Yeah.
It was very nice of him, and I am touting the burgers, too. Very good, easy to cook, and quite yummy.
Yeah, you know, for that Father's Day gift package that we're offering has a huge variety of stuff that you just mentioned, so that really something for everybody who might show up at that cookout, because it's got two filet mignons, two top sirloins, it's got boneless pork chops, it's got eight of those Omaha Steaks burgers, and it's got jumbo Franks. I mean, it's just, the whole thing is just a huge assortment, perfect for the Father's Day cookout.
Todd, tell me if we did this the right way. We treated it like a fantasy draft. We put all the steaks on a table, and one by one, depending on how much we like that particular relative, they got to pick which one of the things they wanted. That seems equitable, doesn't it?
That's a perfect way to do it, because you know, like my daughter loves our hot dogs. My wife loves our filet mignons. I happen to be a top sirloin and a New York strip fan. So whatever's out there, you can give people a great smorgasbord.
I just want everybody listening to know that before our discussion with you, Todd Simon, is over, someone in the listening audience is going to win one of these Steak Fix packages, courtesy of Omaha Steaks. For people who don't win it, you just want to go to the website, omahasteaks.com, and do yourself a favor. Just visit the website and look around and see what they offer, because you won't be disappointed. Everything is so delicious. What's the secret, Todd? There's got to be some secret. What's the secret?
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, we are Omaha Steaks. We are based in Omaha, Nebraska. We get the first look at the very best beef in the country and get to decide whether it becomes Omaha Steaks. Once we buy that amazing beef, we age it. And aging is an old world art that's all but lost today. I mean, nobody does it. We age it for 21 to 28 days. Then we hand trim, we vacuum seal, we flash freeze, and we make it available to our customers with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. We're so confident. My family has been in this business for 102 years. It was started by my great-great-grandfather in 1917. We couldn't make a guarantee like that, you know, because we're not going to take it back, right? If you tell us you don't like it, we're going to give you your money back. But we know people are going to love it, and they're not going to say that. So when you go to omahasteaks.com or you call our 800 number, 800-228-9055, to get that Father's Day steak package, you know, you're going to get something, an amazing gift for Dad, 100% guaranteed.
The vacuum pack is key, because a lot of times if you buy steaks and leave them in your freezer for an extended amount of time, honestly, you can't use them again if they've been in there. This is such a way to make them fresh and tasty all the time.
Right, because there's no air in there. There's no ice crystals that are going to form on the outside. There's no opportunity for freezer burn. And one pro tip for you, all of our vacuum packaging is an easy open package. So it has a little seam on the side, and you just grab both sides of the film and you pull, and it opens right up. So you don't even have to, you know, use a knife, you know, which, you know, some people could find dangerous. You know, you don't want to use a knife. You can just pull them right open.
It's always amazing, Todd, when your gift package arrives from Omaha Steaks. You open up the box and you start taking items out, and you say, well, I've been taking items out for 5 minutes. I must be close to being done. But somehow magically more and more steaks keep appearing. How are you doing that?
Well, it's a special cooler that we had made by the Hogwarts team where things just keep coming out over and over again. You know, one of the things, you know, I don't know if you heard about this, but we did this survey. We surveyed 2,000 dads. We hired a company called OnePoll, and they figured out that 3 in 4 dads prefer an experience over a physical gift for Father's Day. So thinking about that cookout, and 50% of dads say that Father's Day is their favorite day of the year, and almost the number two thing that people wanted for Father's Day was a big juicy steak and to be able to sit down for a meal with their family.
Oh, so nice.
You know, Omaha Steaks checks so many boxes when it comes to that. You know, and dad's hard to buy for. You know, you never quite know what he wants.
Todd, I also have to throw this past you, because you're one of the owners there at Omaha Steaks. The Father's Day Steak Fix package is valued at $235, but somebody who works for you made a typo, and we're giving it away, practically giving away, for $59.99. Were you aware of this? Because I don't want you guys to lose money. I want you to still be in business. How does that happen, a $235 value being sold for just $59.99?
Well, you know, it's really what we want to do is we want to make sure that as many people in your audience get a chance to sample Omaha Steaks and get a chance to try the wide variety of things that we sell. And so we just felt it was important to put together a package with a lot of variety, because we don't know exactly what people are going to like, but we know that once you try any of these products, you're going to come back and buy them again at omahasteaks.com.
What's your most successful item on reorders? Because once people get a taste of the sampler platter, I'm sure they're going for one or two or three very specific things. What's the biggest turnover for you guys?
Well, it's really, you know, obviously our sweet spot is the beef, so the filet mignons, the top sirloins, the burgers, but you know, the stuff for the kids, like the Franks, not that you have to be a kid, you should be a kid at heart, I guess, to love a Frank. And then one of the things that's been really popular are our desserts. It's been a growing category for us, and this package has caramel apple tartlets in it.
Tartlets.
One of our most popular.
They are really good.
And they're Oh, yeah. You heat them in the oven for like 20 minutes, and then you serve them with a scoop of vanilla ice cream or cinnamon ice cream or whatever your favorite ice cream is, and they are absolutely to die for. And people just come back for those time after time.
So don't grill the tartlets. Cook those inside, you're saying.
Yeah, those you bake. Those
all
you
right.
bake in an oven.
There's
yep.
the mistake yep. we made last night. It all makes sense. It all makes sense now.
Although I'm telling you, with these stones on your grill now, you can almost bake anything.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Well, Todd, right. If
go
you've
on.
Got the right setup to turn your grill kind of into an oven like thing, then yes, you could cook them there.
We have less than 2 weeks until Father's Day, so please do yourself a favor. Visit OmahaSteaks.com. Look for this Father's Day steak fix package. But you've been kind enough to give us a nice giveaway right now. 312-981-7200. Wendy, you had an idea since Father's Day is coming up in a few weeks.
Yes, it is on June 16th. That's Father's Day, so let's do the 16th call. 312-981-7200 Father's Day Steak Fix Package from Omaha Steaks. It's yummy.
So good. Todd, great to talk to you again. I hope you have a wonderful Father's Day yourself.
Well, thank you so much, and tell everybody they need to visit omahasteaks.com.
Done deal. Call them now. Visit them online. Thanks, Todd.
All right. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you so much.
Right caller, back at you.
Caller 16, 312-981-7200. We'll get everything we just described to you. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Scott Pelley is live in studio with us. Scott, a former war correspondent, White House correspondent, CBS News anchor, the author of a new book, Truth Worth Telling. First of all, Scott, thank you for being here.
Bill, great to be with you and Wendy. Thanks.
Second of all, let's talk about the title for just a little bit. Does truth mean what it used to mean, or has truth changed a little bit?
Truth has not changed at all. It always means the same thing. Nothing has changed in terms of truth in 2,000 years. It doesn't matter if you're writing on a stone tablet or a stone tablet. The truth is the truth. Now,
here's where it gets good.
The point of your question, Bill, is that we now are living in a moment in which the truth can be made to seem false. And what is false can be made to seem true. And part of what I'm saying in this book is that's where journalism comes in. There's no democracy without journalism. The founders gave us the power, right? The power over the government. But the only way we can exercise that power is with independent, reliable information. But we have gone seamlessly now from the information age to the disinformation age. And that's why I think real, reliable information like you have on WGN Radio is more important today than it ever has been.
Yeah.
And it's so discouraging for journalists all over right now to even hear that term fake news.
I bet this has happened to you, Wendy. Somebody came up to me on the street the other day and said, oh, this must be a terrible time to be a reporter. And I said, no, this is a great time to be a reporter because everybody's looking at us right now. And this is an opportunity. I particularly tell this to young people that this is an opportunity for us to show people what we do, show them how we do it, and tell them a little bit about our values and our principles.
How do you get people to believe you, though?
Well, that's a great question, and my my answer to that is just keep telling the truth, just again and again and again. You know, James Madison wrote that freedom of speech and freedom of the press are the rights that guarantee all the others. He knew that if we could read what we want to read, write what we want to write, hear what we want to hear, say what we want to say, then all the rights he put in the Bill of Rights would be protected.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening in our country right now. We are having a huge debate about journalism and truth and falsehood, but that's what the founders had in mind. As long as we can talk about this and say whatever the heck we want to say on WGN, then all of our rights will be protected.
Do you think that the president has made journalists the enemy of the people?
Well, you know, when I was anchoring the evening news in the first year of the Trump administration, we were very frank about what he was saying, what was true, what wasn't, and how we knew that. And it wasn't long after that he described CBS News as the enemy of the American people. Well, a few weeks later, I went to the White House. Me and several other anchors had been invited to have lunch with the president. And over the lunch table with everybody there, I said, you know, Mr. President, I'm concerned. I mean, take your best shot at the press. Absolutely. I get that. But enemy of the American people, I'm afraid some deranged individual is going to walk into a local TV station or newspaper and shoot the receptionist because she's the enemy of the American people. And the president looked up at the ceiling, and then he looked back at me, and this is a direct quote. He said, "I don't worry about that." So fast forward a few months later, more than a year later, I would say, you remember the guy who mailed all the letter bombs to the people he considered to be enemies of the president?
Yes.
Well, the FBI calls me one day and says that they've been through the guy's computer. He has a file on me and my family, and he has my home address.
Oh, my God.
So one of the things that I'm telling people, one of the things I write about in the book, is that the rhetoric has become too incendiary on the right and on the left.
Both sides.
As Americans, we need to come back together in the middle, have a great argument about who's right about what, but we have to keep it within the bounds of civility, and I'm very concerned that we're losing that right now.
How do you think we can do that? Because it is nice having differences of opinion, and years ago you could talk about your differences in a civil way. Now there is no talking. It's pointing, it's accusing, it's you're an idiot, you're wrong. How do you think we can help come together?
You know, Wendy, you've just hit right on the head the thing that worries me about our beloved country more than anything else. With the internet and all the sources of information out there, we are now able to, and we're seeing this happen, we're seeing some of our fellow Americans withdraw into what I call digital citadels of confirming information. You can listen to a television channel or read a website that tells you all day long that what you already believe is correct. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a warm feeling.
Yeah.
I can get really used to that. Mm-hmm. But that's not democracy. We invented democracies so that people of diverse backgrounds and different views and different goals could work together and move the country not left, not right, but forward. And Wendy, this is the thing that worries me the most. If we allow ourselves to pull apart and listen only to confirming information and retire from the debate, then I fear a new Cold War. But this time it's a cold civil war.
We're talking to Scott Pelley, newsman Scott Pelley. His book is Truth Worth Telling. It's available right now. I know this is speculative, but let's flash forward 20 years, 50 years. How will history look at this era, do you think?
Wow, what a great question, Bill. Walt Whitman wrote about poets, "He who sees the farthest has the most faith." And so I take the long view. You know, as Reverend King often said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Mm-hmm. You know, human progress, in my view, is one of progress and progress and progress. Every once in a while, we have something horrible happen. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think things always tend to get better. We can see that in so many ways in this country. Right now, with the Me Too movement, with gay marriage being approved, and those sorts of things, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. How will people see this time 50 years from now? I hope we see this moment as the great awakening, that never before in human history have we been in a place where so much information was available to so many people. But the awakening is, never before in human history has more bad information been available to more people. I think the American people are just beginning to realize that with the Russians in 2016. Mm-hmm. Our adversaries have this all figured out. The Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans. What's the fastest way to destroy a democracy? Is it terrorism, war, another Great Depression? I don't think so. I think the fastest way to destroy a democracy is to poison the information. That's what the Russians are doing, the Chinese and North Koreans, even some cynical actors here in the United States to make a buck or win a race. And I hope 50 years from now, people will look back on 2019 and say, there's the moment that we realized we were being conned.
Mm-hmm. You know what gives me the greatest amount of hope right now is I have a 16-year-old son and a 20-year-old son, and they are way into politics. I'm telling you, when I was 16, all I cared about was getting my license. I didn't care, really. I didn't get involved. These kids are involved and aware. That gives me hope.
It absolutely gives you hope, Wendy. I'm so glad to hear that. My kids are much the same way, and as long as we have our young people participating in the systems that the founders created, we're good. I mean, we've been good for more than 220 years. We can have another American century if we will talk to each other and have our young people participate.
Scott, through your reporting, you have been in some very desperate situations. Waco, Texas comes to mind immediately. The first World Trade Center bombing comes to mind immediately. The list goes on and on and on. Is there a commonality when you're covering these stories? Do you get this impending doom and gloom around the area when you're covering these stories? How do you get through that?
You know, Bill, it's funny you should mention that. When I was anchoring the evening news, I was in Paris. We were covering the ISIS attack on Paris. You remember 120 people were killed. And I saw these Parisians setting up a makeshift memorial on a cobblestone street, and children and women and men were bringing all these candles, and they had this look on their face of bewilderment.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me in that moment, I have seen these people before. I saw them at Ground Zero at the World Trade Center on 9/11. I saw them at the Oklahoma City bombing, this look on their face of bewilderment, of essentially asking, what's the meaning of life? And I thought, you know, maybe that's the wrong question. Don't ask the meaning of life. Life is asking, what's the meaning of you? And this book is really about the people that I have met in my life who discovered that answer for themselves.
Yeah.
In some of the historic moments of our time. For example, the first chapter is called Gallantry, and it's about the firefighters that I saw sacrifice their lives at the World Trade Center.
Heroes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Total heroes. We need to take a quick break. Scott Pelley is with us. You have a very busy day, and you are going to end up in Naperville tonight. Community Christian Church, that's 1635 Emerson Lane. This special event is presented by Anderson's Bookshop. We'll talk about that and continue next. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Scott Pelley, 60-minute correspondent, longtime newsman. His book is called Truth Worth Telling. It's available wherever books are sold. You were all over the internet a week ago. You did an interview with CNN where you described the work environment at CBS as a hostile work environment. What was behind that,
Scott? Used to be. And we went through a dark period at CBS News and at CBS writ large as well. And I think everybody's read about that. It was in the papers everywhere about the difficulties we had in terms of sexual harassment in a hostile work environment. And I spoke out internally about that because I felt it was important that the people above me knew what was going on and had awareness. But, you know, all those events were 2 years ago. And now CBS has taken strong action. We've got a new chairman of the entire corporation, a guy named Joe Iannello, who I've known for years, a guy of great principle and vision. We have a new president of the news division, and I laugh because it's my old friend Susan Zirinsky, and I laugh because I can't believe she's the first woman to run the CBS news division. I mean, it's about time.
Just now?
Yes. She's the first woman to run the news division, a great thing. But what's even more important than that is she's been at CBS for 40 years. She has CBS News DNA. And the thing I'm really excited about as a 60 Minutes correspondent is we have a new executive producer of 60 Minutes. His name is Bill Owens. I've known Bill for more than 20 years, and he and I have literally been in combat together in Iraq. And I just don't know a more principled person in the news business than Bill. So really today, Bill and Wendy, I'm more excited about CBS than I ever have been.
Good.
I've been there for 30 years.
Good. You alluded last week to saying that maybe the fact that you were complaining about this hostile work environment could have potentially cost you your job as the anchor. You feel that way, huh?
Well, you know, that is what I said, and I know that there are people at CBS who disagree with me on that point. But what was important is that everyone did everything that they could to root out this hostile work environment. Yeah. And I believe all of these executive changes have done that now.
Good. Very, very good.
Bill, you asked Scott a question off the air. I don't want to steal your question. So go for it.
I think you are one of the best at asking the right question to the right person at the right time. I marvel at your ability to do that. Who did you emulate? Who did you see as you were coming down the file and just say, boy, that guy or that woman, they do it right?
Well, you know, this may surprise you a little bit, but the person who studies the hardest before an interview, works the hardest before an interview, even rehearses an interview with one of his staff members to make sure he's got his game perfect, is Stephen Colbert.
Really?
I truly have never seen anything like it. Stephen's a great friend of mine. Obviously, he's not in the news business. He's in the satire business, the comedy business.
Which is where people get their news these days.
You know, my wife, Jane, says comedy is the new journalism.
Yeah.
And I've told Stephen that I think satire can get closer to the truth than straight reporting can.
Right.
Right? For all the obvious reasons. But Stephen's about the best interviewer, most prepared interviewer I've ever met. John Dickerson at CBS News, really sharp journalist, really sharp. And John knows what you and Wendy know, and that is it's not the questions you write down beforehand that are the magic in an interview. It's what you think of in the back and forth of the conversation. I always tell young people the most important thing in interviewing someone is listening to them.
Yes, because then you can do a follow-up question. And you said the important part of the conversation, that to me as a listener makes a good interview if there's conversation, not just questions, answers, and then on to the next one.
Yeah, too many people walk into a room with 12 questions written down, and while the person's answering question number one, they're thinking about reading question number
two,
and they're not listening. That there's no magic in that,
right.
And that's not obviously what we do at 60 Minutes. People say all the time, gee, you know, how's 60 Minutes going into its 52nd season? Well, Wendy, I think you just hit it right on the head. These are conversations that we have with people. We try to elicit as much interesting information from people as we can.
You've talked to multiple presidents, world leaders, newsmakers. Who has intimidated you? Have you ever interviewed somebody who's gotten you?
Intimidated me. You know, I'm going to have to say that if the word is intimidated, the answer is no one. Somehow, I feel when I'm in that pool of light that our cameramen set up around us, and we've got two chairs, and we're knee to knee, whoever that is, I feel like I'm in my element.
Yeah.
Someone tried to intimidate me once, and that was Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran. I was in his own rose garden in Tehran, and he wouldn't answer my question about whether they were developing nuclear weapons. So I went back at him again and again and again in 60 Minutes style. He got completely exasperated, and he said to me finally, he said, "Are you a CIA agent?" This is Iran, and I am president of this country. You know, as in, how dare you? And that's when I knew I had a great interview.
Yeah, yeah, you did your job.
How do you know when to pull back and when to keep, not badgering, but keep continuing the question you want the answer to? How do you know? Is there a...
You know, it's a little bit like fly fishing. It is. It is. If you start pulling too hard and you start getting resistance, I try to let off the line a little bit, maybe go somewhere else and then circle back around after that person has had a chance to think about, oh gosh, why did he ask me that? Or what am I going to say about that? If you give them a minute, they may come up with an answer that they can give you. But it's a little bit like fly fishing, yeah.
It's interesting.
Who, since you mentioned Stephen Colbert, the wheels in my head are spinning. Who was the late night host that used to, from time to time, comment on how ripped you are? Was it David Letterman who would always talk about how you're the most ripped of all newsmen?
You know, I think it might have been Stephen.
Was it? Yeah.
And for your viewers, rather your listeners, that was a long time ago. So, although since I'm on radio, I'll say that I'm absolutely
bigger
ripped.
Than ever.
Yeah, bigger.
Than better
ever.
Than
yeah.
ever. Uh-huh. What, Scott, now that this book is a huge hit, and it is, what's the next book? Have you figured that out already?
Oh, you know what? My hobby, and it's a very serious one, is photography.
Yeah.
And I've been talking to my publisher about publishing a book of photography. One of the great things about being at 60 Minutes is that I go to the most remote places in the world, meet the most amazing societies and cultures, see the greatest wild animals in the world. Mm-hmm. And so I've got quite a collection of photographs, and I might try that next.
That'd be a great book.
Yeah.
Please do that. What an honor to meet you. Been a fan forever, and then you come in and you're even better in real life. So what an honor it is to meet you. Scott Pelley's book is called Truth Worth Telling. It's available everywhere, and you can be seen tonight in Naperville.
In Naperville, that's right. Anderson Books up there is hosting an event, and I'm really looking forward to being up there. Yeah, and I'm at the Union League Club at noon.
Perfect.
Yeah. Busy.
Busy, but so glad to have a chance to speak with you.
Oh, thank you,
Scott. Honor to meet you.
Thank you so much. A quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand, who is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Steve, I feel bad. We should have invited you, also newsman, of course, to ask a question or two of Scott Pelley. I feel awful.
Well, I was a little surprised when he was talking about his influences and he didn't mention me.
Yes, so that was a shock.
After that, I didn't really care to meet him.
Steve, you're always welcome to jump in, or as Bill calls it, butt in.
Butt in. I've never said that out loud. I would never say that.
You know the term I was here is chime in.
Chime in.
Oh, okay.
No, that's never a good thing, I think. Chime in is like, well, you chime in.
Steve had fun with a woodpecker over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
It sounded like his neighbor was riveting metal somewhere, and he took a video of a woodpecker. Doesn't your woodpecker know it's not a metal gutter pecker? I mean, he wasn't pecking on the wood.
We talked about that, right? That
yes, the louder.
Try to make noise. It won't play over my phone, will it?
Probably, if you hold it up to the microphone. I can't believe how loud this thing is.
Wow.
That's it.
Isn't that unbelievable? And how quick?
It's pecking on the gutter to make noise to attract Winnie Woodpecker.
Yeah. Did Winnie come? Because I saw it swoop away.
Well, I don't know.
It sounds like that thing, it's a party favor at New Year's Eve where you hold a stick and you twirl it around and it just circles for some reason. I don't know why
clicker
that's fun.
Thinger.
So I'm sitting in the house, I'm all by myself, I'm like, what the? Because were you serious, Wendy, when you texted back you thought someone was riveting? It was like a riveter?
Yes, honest to God, because I didn't see the actual woodpecker on your gutter.
Right.
So I showed it to my son, Michael, and he goes, there's the little guy up there. I'm like, you can see it? And then I zoomed in and saw it.
Right. Because I couldn't get closer because he flew away, but...
You could have brought that up with Scott Pelley. He would have loved a good woodpecker story.
Well, he could have taken a picture of it.
I have one goal. Whenever we have a guest of that magnitude, Scott Pelley, of course, a very well-respected news person for CBS for decades, and I always have one goal when those people come in, and that is to get through the interview without saying anything really stupid.
I think you did pretty well.
You did great. He intimidated me as I told Bill off the air.
Why?
I said, Bill, you did a great job with this because I was intimidated. And he said, why? And I go, because he's the real deal.
He is.
Wait a minute. Now that's the only thing that hurts me right there.
You are a different real deal.
Don't finish
You're
the
our
sentence.
Local real deal. He's an international real deal.
Yeah, this is pretty intimidating.
I looked up in the monitor and I saw all of your backs and... He had his arms around each of you, and you had your arms around him. And for a second, I'm like, oh, my God, they're doing a prayer circle.
No, we did the whole interview that way, Steve. Oh.
But it was for the picture.
Right, it was for the picture. It was. Do you remember there was a videotape of him, and I don't know if this was, he was probably already working for 60 Minutes, so it could have been a 60 Minute piece. It was he and Hugh Jackman lifting weights together. Did you ever see this, Steve?
No.
And he really, I mean, when you think about... Your network news guys, they're not out of shape, but they're not...
Oh, Fahey Flynn was great.
He was chiseled. Fahey Flynn was a chiseled newsman. But most of these guys aren't like in peak physical condition, but he said though that was a long time ago, but no, even today, he was in great shape. Tremendous shape. I don't know what he's doing. All right, another YouTube...
It was 2012 that video was taken.
Oh, was it that long ago?
But he's still in good shape.
Have you ever seen it?
I'm looking at it right now.
It's hit, and it's Hugh Jackman at his most pumped. It's when he was being Wolverine, and his arms. I mean, they did some prosthetic muscles on him, but he was so.
They did.
Yeah, yeah. Just
I don't
a little
think
bit.
They did.
Oh yeah, a little bit.
Jealous.
Just a little. I am jealous. Another YouTube star is in trouble, Wendy. This is very upsetting news. Do you know the story at all?
Yeah.
About the Oreos. YouTube prankster Keng Hu Ren, age 21, who tricked a homeless man into eating Oreos filled with toothpaste in January of 2017, was sentenced to 15 months in prison and ordered to pay restitution. A Barcelona court ordered Ren to pay $22,300 in compensation. Since he's a first-time offender, this is a part of the story that I'm unclear about. I'm not. I wasn't
why
aware
he's going
of this.
To jail for 15 no, months because that
I
seems
that
a little
part.
Strict.
It's
not a good thing to do, but over a year.
Well, here's the part that I find the most fascinating. Since he's a first-time offender, Spanish law usually suspends prison time for those sentenced to less than 2 years, according to the New York Times. So if you commit a crime and your sentence is less than 2 years, they look the other way on that.
I'm moving.
You should move there immediately to Barcelona.
Oh, yeah.
The court, however, did order Ren's social media accounts on YouTube and other platforms to be suspended for 5 years. Now, if that's the way this guy earns a living on YouTube, that's the most damaging part of this to him. They took away his YouTube account, so he has no income from YouTube. Ren, who video blogs under the name of Retset, filmed himself in January of 2017, replacing the white filling in a whole packet of biscuits with toothpaste. Keep in mind, biscuits is the European way of saying
yes.
Cookies.
Oreos.
with toothpaste and then repackaging it. The then 19-year-old gave them to a homeless man named George L. that he found on the streets of Barcelona. George said he felt sick and he threw up for 5 minutes after eating them, and he feared for his life as he didn't know who Retset was or what was in the cookies. Maybe I've gone a bit too far, but look at the positive side. This will help him clean his teeth. I think he hasn't cleaned them since he became poor, he joked on the video.
Oh, that's hysterical.
That's hysterical. Retset earned $2,200 in advertising revenue through his channel that has made more than 1 million subscribers, this according to court documents.
Can I just say $2,200 is not very much if you have more than 1 million subscribers?
I don't think it is either, is it?
Uh-uh.
It doesn't seem like a lot. I don't know what the formula is. I've always heard people say, with X amount of hits, you start getting money for your videos, but the formula has never been made clear to me.
Yeah,
do you know what
know.
It is? I don't know what it is. But you would think if something's generated that many hits, 1 million hits, and advertisers are sponsoring this,
you'd get more than
$2,200. The blogger was charged with a crime against moral integrity, with prosecutors initially seeking a 2-year jail term and restitution to George. After facing backlash from his viewers, Retset was back to George in another video to see how he liked the toothpaste-filled Oreos. People exaggerate over jokes in the street on a beggar when surely if it's done to a normal person, they wouldn't say anything.
It's not a nice thing to do, but I'm sorry, 15 months in prison seems pretty stiff for
right.
that.
If he had to serve it. It looks like, as we mentioned, Spain somehow looks the other way on any jail term less than 2 years. Do they do that in the United States? I've never heard of this before.
Yes, Jussie Smollett.
All right. I will ask him. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show ahead. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I just want to let you know that I did the LaGrange Pet Parade this weekend, and last year at this time, I was a neighborhood watch.
Yes.
I saw no wrongdoings.
But I bet you were eagle-eyed throughout to make sure that nothing unsavory went down during this parade.
Yeah, last year I saw a ticking backpack that I told the authorities about, mm-hmm. and someone left a dog in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I did see some carnies that didn't wash their hair, so I called somebody about that.
Not a crime, though.
Yeah, I know.
That's a personal preference. That's not a crime.
And I took Kona to the pet parade, and the sirens were making him a little nervous. And then the LT High School band came with the drums, so I went and took Kona home, and the Jesse White Tumblers were there, and they're awesome.
Yeah.
And they set up a bunch of firemen and police officers, and they jumped over them.
Sure.
It's just unbelievable.
Well, they're tumblers, Wendy. That's what they do.
I can't even tell you how cool they are. Jimmy Mack was following them the whole route.
Uh-huh.
I was almost afraid he was, you know, I'd look away for a minute and all of a sudden I'd see him on the little trampoline going, oh, God, please, no, Jim. But no, that didn't happen.
Now, remind me, in the past, you have been the Grand Marshal for this parade. It was, you were the Grand Marshal again this year?
No,
you were
not.
You were
not this year.
You just,
no.
You watched.
Yeah, it's just, it's really fun. You know, this is your hell, but my heaven, because there are a lot of pets in the parade.
Yes. Yes.
And it's cute.
Do they treat you like royalty because you're a former Grand Marshal?
No.
They must give you a nice seat, prime viewing. No?
No,
nothing like that.
No,
that's
no.
Upsetting.
It's just crazy town in
LaGrange.
Sign
a lot of autographs?
No. No?
Hmm. A little surprised.
Quit making fun of
I'm
me.
A
I
surprised.
Just,
I'm not. It's
I
an
partook.
Honor.
I mean, I used to always watch this parade. I was lucky enough to be in it for 2 years. I kind of like watching.
And the Grand Marshal was whom?
I don't know.
Hmm.
Kona was keeping me kind of busy.
Oh.
Sniffing all the other dogs as we walk by. He was
our
very
friend
good,
Steve Dale has in the past been the Grand Marshal.
Yes.
Yeah.
There have
he
been,
should be every year.
He really should be part of it.
I don't know why they wouldn't make that just an annual event that he's the Grand Marshal.
And then the big carnival in town.
The pet carnival?
It's, the pet parade, 3 days from Thursday night till Sunday.
Wait, which part is 3 days? The parade?
The carnival.
The carnival part is 3 days.
Yeah, they set up, and they must have worked clear into the night last night, because they closed at 9 a.m., and as, you know, I was driving to work today, it's amazing how quickly they work.
Yeah. And like most carnivals, Wendy, when it's over, are some of the locals missing? That always happens in movies. We can't find Jerry. Where'd Jerry go? I don't know. He went to the carnival, and it's the last we saw of him.
Just kind of cracks me up. I would have enjoyed working at the carnival. You know, you get to see travel the country, see the world.
Yeah. Yes. Well, did you think about
work,
it
though.
As a kid? Ever?
No, but it cracks me up today.
An era before ours, that was always the threat that some kid would just go, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to blow this town and I'm going to join the carnival.
I thought it was run away and join the circus.
Well, yeah, carnival, circus, similar.
They're very different.
Are they, though?
I didn't see any clowns at the carnival. Just funnel cakes. Funnel cakes the clown.
Is he there this year? He smells so sugary. You got to get up a little closer than you're comfortable with, but he has a very sugary smell, that guy. Were there games of chance?
Yeah, my son was going to play it.
Oh, you can't lose on those.
Well, that's what's so bad.
You're guaranteed a huge prize on those every year.
He was going to get the wristband, which gives you like 4 hours of unlimited rides.
Mm.
But it's $30. I thought that was a lot of money for 4 hours.
Wow, that is a lot of money.
And then I said, why don't you just play the games? And Michael looked at me like, really, Mom? Which are you going to lose more money on? The $30 wristband or the games that you can never win?
You may be the first parent in history that tried to talk their kids into playing carnival games.
I want a kick-ass Leonard Skinner mirror a couple of years ago.
That's like a gift. That'll be until the end of time. That'll be what you can win in a carnival, is a Leonard Skinner mirror.
I know, and a big pink snake that isn't really that big. You can trade up, you know, if you spend like $100 and you win the little ones,
right?
They let you trade up, but I still have my Skinnerd mirror.
My friends and I were convinced when we were kids, we would always get, it was called the JC's Carnival, and it would roll into town the week of the 4th of July. So we had it that whole week. And we were convinced that there must be some sort of a system to beat the carnival games. So we wouldn't play for a while. We would just sit back and watch and try to figure out what the gimmick or the trick must be. Like, there was this one thing they had called the color wheel. And it was like a big, you know, you would just
like
spin this
giant wheel.
Wheel
of fortune kind of thing.
But it must have had, you know, the basic colors are obvious, right? Yellow, orange, blue, green. But this had different shades of every color. There must have been 35 colors on the color wheel. But we would just sit and watch, and we'd try to figure out by the spin, it's going to come up bright orange. It hasn't been bright orange in 16 spins. It's going to be bright. We would figure it out to the smallest detail. We never won anything. But we thought, well, the more time we spend here, eventually we'll figure these games out. But you couldn't.
I won some things. I mean, you know,
you'd
sometimes
win small things. But you always had to trade up.
Right.
Like if you got three or four or five little things, you can move to the next level.
But it shows you can win.
Yeah.
You know, the metal milk bottles that are shaped in pyramid form.
Right. That are made of some substance that doesn't allow them to tip over.
No, because I've seen somebody do it, and then they have like this stuffed little mop top doll or something, and you're supposed to hit it and it falls down. Is that with the squirt gun?
But the trick with that is, no, you would throw these modified baseballs
at
it.
Yeah.
The trick with those is it's a doll, but it's got like this furry rim around it.
Yeah.
But that makes it look like it's a wide target when really you got to peg it right in the middle. If you hit it just on the fringe part, on the side, that won't knock it over.
You got to hit it. To ruin everything.
Well, because I studied these, Wendy. I'm a student of the game.
There's got to be some carnival game that people win. What about the free throws?
No, the free throws, the ball is just a little bit bigger than the hoop you have to hit it in.
No, because you can get some in.
But it's also, like, it's not a true bounce off the backboard.
Well, you don't want to bounce it off the backboard. You want to sink it.
I guess.
I don't bank things off a backboard.
But every year we would go in under the belief that we could study the game a little bit before we played.
Did you guys really sit there?
Oh, yeah. We would just, there'd be four or five of us. Looking just like the little rascals, just, we'd all be wiping our chin. There's got to be a way to figure these games out. Somebody's going to take these JC's Carnival people to the cleaners. It's going to be us. But it never worked out that way.
You lose more on games, says 630. Four of us adults spent $50 in arcade redemption games in under an hour at the Dells.
Wow. Did you ever see that one where there's a series of little, there are plates in the center of like a booth. And then you have to throw a quarter and make it stay on the plate.
That's fun.
It's fun, but I don't know. Your chances of making that happen. But you come up with these ways, like I'll toss it with backspin on it. I'll flip my finger
Or like
back.
A little mini frisbee.
Right. No. And there used to be a sign on there that you couldn't put any foreign objects on your quarter because somebody'd figure out, well, if I gunk it up with gum, it'll just stick
Who
to the plate.
Who would have thought that?
My friend Dan. I'm not going to name names, but Dan, I'll just put gum all over it, and then it'll hit the plate and stick to the plate.
That's a genius idea. Did that ever work?
No, because they have signs up that you can't put any foreign object. It says, hey, Dan, no foreign objects on your quarters. We're watching you.
I like the
carnival. And then the hotcakes, the clown, would come and have a word with him.
And I'm not, to the texter, I am not making fun of carnival workers.
No.
Honestly, it just seems like a really carefree kind of life. It's hard work.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe it's all gone. It was like the opposite of Santa Claus. It's like all of a sudden, things are gone.
And then somebody goes, did it ever really happen?
Yeah.
It's gone that mysteriously.
No, I mean, if I was a young person and single again, I would think about that. You get to wear concert shirts.
You do.
Smoke. It's really fun.
They encourage it. You get a bonus structure based on how many smokes you have going. And you know where you keep your cigarettes, right?
Where?
In the sleeve of your t-shirt.
No, because you cut the sleeves off.
Oh.
That's the new breed of carny.
Oh.
The dart game to pop the balloons was easy. That's true. You didn't have really good... You went at like a keychain or a sticker or something.
Oh.
But the dart game says
or
somebody...
Or the finger cuffs. That was always a prize at ours.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant it was a game. I'm like, well,
no.
How do you win that one?
It was a constant prize. Like, you remember the thing? They called him Hank. They were... I can't even say the term is offensive now.
Yeah,
it's
I know what you're talking
handcuffs,
about.
But you'd put them in your fingers,
and then when you panic and pull,
you couldn't get it out.
Yeah, but then if you relaxed, you could get it out very easily.
Right.
Or ping pong ball and the goldfish bowl.
Oh, right.
That was more like your school fun fairs.
Right.
I don't know if they have that at carnivals because it's usually hot. Those fish will boil.
Well, they give the goldfish something that times it to as soon like the minute you get them home, they die. The second you walk in your house.
Mine lived at least a year.
Did they really?
Yeah, you got to take care of them. That's the weird thing.
Oh.
All right. We need to take a break, right? A break here. And we'll come back and do some news. And then Eric Zorn's going to stop by.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new month. That means tweets of the month. Looking forward to that. It's Bill. It's Wendy at 720 WGN. Whiskey and Zorn. Sounding his own.
Zorn of the Chicago Tribune joins us right now. This is your alternate theme song. Is this your closing theme?
I have two theme songs. Well,
right.
It's like the Beverly Hillbillies. I've got an opening theme and a closing theme.
It's good to have a backup theme song in case your regular theme song for some reason.
In case the band doesn't know it.
Right.
Like
right.
So it's always good to have a couple of theme songs.
Yeah.
And you got to carry the boombox around.
Sure.
It's
not easy. How are you, Eric?
I'm good.
Everything good?
Yeah, things are good. Things are fine.
I like switching over the calendar page because then we get to find out the best tweets of the month.
Yes, it's the tradition that we started here on the Bill and Wendy Show, where I come in the first Monday of every month and I read the best tweets from my feed.
Mm-hmm.
And I do this weekly contest, as mm-hmm. you guys know. And I have readers vote on what the best tweets are. But then as the month goes on, I usually pick out the ones that I like.
Yes.
And sometimes it's not the same ones that the readers
like.
Oh,
does that happen sometimes?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, yeah. Some of the ones in this list are ones that won the weekly contest, but other ones are not.
Oh,
other
interesting.
Ones did not even fare very well, because I have a slightly darker sense of humor than most people do.
And well, that's why we love you, Eric. And remind us again, the winner gets a huge prize, right, every month?
Gets their name in the Sunday Chicago Tribune, which is not big. Something that a lot of people get.
That's a big
and
prize.
They can dine out on that for years. you can go to a literally, you can go to a restaurant.
Right.
And the maitre d' gives you a hard time. You can just, like, pull out the old
yellow.
Perhaps we can get a table. You slip it to, instead of a 20.
Oh, booth one, sir. Come this way. Senator.
Sorry, sir, that we made you wait. Unthinkable. So anyway, here in no particular order are the top 10 tweets that came across my feed.
Can we ask everybody to please hold their applause until the end?
Hold your applause to the end, and also Jasmine will put a link to the actual list at the Bill and Wendy page so that you'll have the attributions.
No.
So, because sometimes there are
people
these,
deserve that.
Sometimes there are these funny little, you know, at so and so, and you can't even pronounce them.
Right.
Or sometimes they're like dirty.
Oh,
I have that problem sometimes.
Oh,
people have like ones that are dirty or have slang terms I'd never heard before that I look them up and go, my goodness,
this is horrible.
My goodness, this ought to be a family
right.
website, but it's not.
Oh.
I mean, really,
all right. Well, thank you for doing that.
Anyway, number one. It's good they call it the Statue of Liberty. So right off the bat, you know it's a statue and not a giant or something.
That's funny, but I like jokes about giants.
Yes, okay. I don't mind not being everyone's cup of tea, because everyone's cup of tea seems unsanitary.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you drink the blue liquid from a magic eight ball, you can see the future. Trust me, my friend Keith did this once. He said he was going to die, and then he did. So that one didn't do very well, because
it's very dark.
It's very dark, but
yeah,
I thought
dark.
It was funny. I wonder if the guy who came up with the term one-hit wonder came up with any other phrases.
Sometimes when you do these tweets, I imagine Stephen Wright saying them.
Yes.
Even though he probably didn't write that one, I can imagine him saying that.
Yeah, well, that's another problem we get into sometimes is I'll put some of these tweets in the contest and someone will write and go, did you know that this was a... And they'll give a link to an
attribute
old
it to somebody else.
People steal tweets. There is no morality.
There's no Twitter police.
This tweet only works on May 6th, but I really like it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Happy penis to Sigmund Freud. What? No, I'm pretty sure I said birthday.
You're dirty.
Wendy was offended by that one, Eric.
Really sorry.
Very offended.
My ex has a really hard time moving on. From what I can tell through his blinds, he's currently eating, which is something we always did.
That one's stalkery.
Yeah.
When the inventor
These are dark and twisted.
Very dark. Well, that's Eric.
Here's me. When the inventor of the USB stick dies, they'll gently lower the coffin, then pull it back up, turn it the other way, and lower it again. Here's one that actually won the contest this week. It's really happy campers stay in hotels.
I love that.
I really like that. I heard that from Deb Rusnak, who's the co-leader of Girl Scout Troop 41666 in Skokie. And she said that they had taken their girls to Rock Cut Park in Winnebago County and over the weekend, and instead of camping out, they stayed at a Holiday Inn Express.
That's better.
And she wrote and said, this is like the coincidence of a lifetime.
Yeah,
so
it's much better.
I would mention that. I taught a man how to buy fish. So much easier
than teaching them to fish. Very funny.
And the last one is, a recent medical study shows that women who carry a little extra weight generally live longer than the men in their lives who mention it.
That one's funny and true.
Those are the 10 best tweets for the month of May.
Very good. So. Very, very good. Eric, since we saw you last, there have been a lot of rule changes here in the state of Illinois.
Everything
have you noticed
has changed.
That?
Everything's
different.
Has
changed.
Huge things too.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, it was when we saw this. We saw this coming as we went along.
Yeah.
That there was going to be a lot of changes because the General Assembly was waiting till its May 31st deadline, which they often do, but occasionally they just sputter out.
Yeah,
and they'll just be, you know,
not
minor
this
things
time.
Not this time. Governor Pritzker made a lot of big promises. on the campaign trail. He talked about expanding gambling. He talked about legalized marijuana. He talked about expanding abortion rights. He talked about doing a an infrastructure bill.
Yeah,
a lot of money, and he basically came through on everything.
Yeah,
I mean, there were a few things that didn't happen that they wanted to have happen, but for the most part, this was one of the most historic sessions of the General Assembly that anyone can remember. It sort of harkens back to the old days when Jim Thompson was governor and they yeah. were doing a lot of deals. And it struck such a sharp contrast to what's been going on in Springfield for the last 4 years, where Governor Rauner was pretty much standing in the way of everything the Democrats wanted to do. They didn't have a budget, if you remember, for more than 2 years.
For a long time.
And so they came in the big things, first of all, he did tick off one fairly big thing somewhat early in the legislative session. They got the both houses of the General Assembly, both chambers, to approve the a referendum on the 2020 ballot to ask if we want to go to a graduated income tax system.
Yeah.
Right now, there's a flat tax. Everyone pays 4.95%, I think it is, on your income in Illinois. And they want to go to a graduated system like we have, the federal government has, like about 32 states have.
Where yes.
The richer you are, the higher you percentage you pay. To do that requires a constitutional amendment, because our Constitution specifies a flat tax. And so due to that, they had to get super majorities in both the Senate and the House, and now they're going to have to get a 60% majority in the 2020 election to get that enacted. So it's a big, heavy lift. They managed to get that out of the way. But just in the last couple of days, like Friday, Thursday and Friday, they managed to pass they legalized recreational marijuana for adults. They passed this significant expansion of abortion rights.
Yeah.
They passed, and over the weekend, they managed to get gambling done.
Yeah.
So that there's going to be a casino in Chicago. Any ideas where you want that to be?
Well, there are a couple of theories. The old post office was a theory for
there's
a long
no
time, but they can't do that now. They talked about it at Navy Pier for a while, but I don't think they can do that now. The one that seems to make the most sense is around McCormick Place.
Right, the old Michael Reese Hospital site
yeah.
down there south of McCormick
yeah.
Place around 31st Street.
Yeah.
Seems like a logical spot.
Right.
People talk about the Thompson Center.
Oh, that'd
you know,
be interesting.
The old State of Illinois building, that big Helmut Jahn
yeah.
glass.
Yeah.
Basically a huge atrium with some offices at the edges. And they keep talking about selling that building, doing something with it, because it's a very strange building if you want to show people that your government is efficient, because they're heating this enormous
right.
heating and cooling this enormous area. And if you remember when they first built that thing, they had incredible problems because it was like a greenhouse.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, we have this big glass thing and the sun beats down on it, and everyone's cooking in here.
But boy, the plants look good.
And it's a little bit shabby if you've been there. You know, they haven't kept it up the way they
right.
the way you
That's
might
a
want
weird
to.
Location in the center of all things, though, isn't
well,
it?
Well, the question with you have, and of course, one of the other ideas, Mayor Emanuel always wanted to have it down on the southeast side, you know, down really close to Indiana.
Yeah.
Sort of Skyway-ish area, if you think about Chicago.
And then you can pick up fireworks on the way home.
You could get fireworks and go get cheap cigarettes, and now cheaper gas, because the gas tax is going to go up by 19
right.
cents. And the idea was that so many people from Chicago are going down to Hammond to gamble. There's all
so why not cut them off at the
so
pass?
So cut them off at the pass. And
kind of makes sense.
It kind of makes sense. On the other hand, there's also a casino in Des Plaines.
Yeah.
There are going to be a casino in Waukegan. There are casinos up in Wisconsin. I think what you want to try to do is get the tourist traffic.
Right.
So you want people who are in town and most of our big conventions are at McCormick Place or in that area down there, south of the Loop.
Yeah.
And so, to me, having it near McCormick Place makes the most sense. It makes more sense than the old post office. You want your conventioners to be able to get a little shuttle bus and not have to get on the
right.
orange line or whatever. And there's another proposal to put it on the southwest side. So there's this idea that you put it into a poor neighborhood. And I don't think that's a very good idea.
That's
either.
Not a good idea.
You know, I think you don't want to have it be a magnet for people who are already, you know, sort of desperate, poor, whatever.
But Eric, anytime they sell a city on this idea, and it's always the same, they say, look, here's a depressed area, but when the casino goes in, it's good news for everybody. It's going to grow businesses. It's going to make restaurants and hotels flourish. It just doesn't seem to.
It really doesn't.
It doesn't.
You're right.
Well, casinos themselves are sort of depressing places, wouldn't you say? Do you spend many time in them anymore?
I used to, not anymore.
Reformed. Yeah. They say that the one in Chicago is going to be bigger than the Bellagio in Vegas.
Really?
You've been there? I mean, that's one that I've actually been to.
I don't gamble.
These enormous places.
Can you still get free drinks if you're, you know, at the slot machine?
You have to pretend
machine?
You're gambling.
Yes.
Well, I could do the slot machine for a little while.
Yeah.
They might bring you a drink. Probably not an alcoholic drink.
Right.
It would be like orange juice. Or,
oh, well, forget it.
Like Tang. Probably Tang.
Will they do
Tang.
That here? They do that. Do they still do that in Vegas?
Yeah. Free
will they do that here?
Gambling.
I'm sure they will.
I would imagine.
Are they free food and all that? I mean, they really
you
want
get
to
get a lot of
there.
Perks.
You go in there. There's no windows or no clocks.
Right.
Oxygen being pumped in.
Right. Really?
Yeah, isn't that true? I've been to Vegas once
there
for
is.
5 hours. I'm acting like a pro.
Well, and the things are, they're also going to be video gaming terminals and so on at
mm-hmm.
the airports.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really trying to get this money from people who are not Chicagoans. I mean, this is the ideal situation would be to get money from people who are out of state,
right.
out of the city, so on.
Right.
And, you know, if they can do that, that'd be great, I guess. I don't really like the vibe. I've been in some of those airports, like in Reno and Vegas, where there's gambling everywhere.
It seems desperate.
There's something about it I don't really care for.
Right.
And you know, I have similar reservations, and we've talked about marijuana on this segment before, where I'm all for freedom, for people to have freedom, and I also think that most people use it responsibly. Most adults use it responsibly, and yet there's still something that I kind of worry about.
Yeah,
you know, kids getting into it a little bit more easily, and people driving and not being able to tell how impaired they are.
Because
they got to figure that out.
There's some issues that I have with that, and so I'm not like over the moon about what's happened in Springfield.
The other thing is, this is all going to end up costing us a lot of money.
I thought the gambling and the weed is going to help get us back on track, but then why are the taxes going up in addition to this newfound money coming
well,
in?
Well, the income taxes aren't going up. The gas tax is going up because they have something like, what is it, $40 billion infrastructure project.
Yeah.
And essentially what's happened is that over the years, Illinois has let its roads, its bridges, its tunnels, its rail, everything.
What do we pay tolls for? Wasn't that just supposed to be temporary?
It was supposed to be temporary, Wendy. You're right. You busted them.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Weren't we on the air here when the bridge here on Lakeshore Drive?
Yes.
All of a sudden we were like, wait a minute, what's going on over there? Like, the bridge is falling into the water.
Yes.
So that they have these problems, and they need to address them. And infrastructure projects are really popular because they create jobs, and your legislator can go and cut a ribbon and say, look, we are building this bridge, we're repaving this road thanks to me and my vote in Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to do that, and that stuff is really important. We're raising the cigarette tax by $1 a pack, which I think is, I understand that, but it also seems like that's going to hit poor people harder than rich people. Generally.
Right. The electric car sticker went way up.
The electric car sticker is now $230-some a year, up from, it was
50 or
but
60 every
other
year.
But you're saving it on not using the gas that it went up, you know?
You are, but in a way you're being penalized for adapting.
For living here.
Well, the original proposal was $1,000 a year, which seemed crazy to me because you want to encourage people to switch over,
right?
To
not penalize
because
them.
Ultimately, I think you're going to be able to power these cars with renewable energy.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, of course, that we fund our road repairs and all that stuff through gas taxes. We hadn't raised the gas tax since 1990. It's 19 cents a gallon state gas tax since 1990, and so. To still have it be 19 cents all these years later, I mean, 30 years later almost, is just really irresponsible. One thing they did was they did raise it, but they've also indexed it to inflation, which I think is really smart.
Yeah.
So they don't have to go through this each time. But when you have a car that doesn't use any gas, those electric cars, then they're not actually paying for the roads that they're driving on to keep those in good repair. So that made some sense. A lot of these taxes they're sticking on make some sense. They seem a little high. The real question, though, to me...
Wait, don't say it yet.
Okay, but I have a real question, a broader question,
yes.
But I see by the clock that we have to take a short break.
Eric, you're a master.
I'm a radio pro.
Eric Zorn is here. He's a radio pro. We'll talk more to him next. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, please, if you would, finish your thoughts.
This could also be a theme song for me.
This could easily this be could your be. Theme song.
Now, my big thought is, with all these changes in Springfield, the test is going to be, what is life going to be like in Illinois in 3.5 years or so, when presumably Governor Pritzker runs for re-election? Is he going to be able to say, I have begun to tame the pension beast, which is a huge problem in Illinois. Mm-hmm. I have brought down the number of unpaid bills. It's now about $6.7 billion we're buying our bills. I've brought that down. I've improved our bond rating. I've made Illinois a better place to live, a more attractive place for business and for people to live. If he can say that, all this other stuff is just details.
Right.
Either way, I mean, if this stuff doesn't work out, then he's a failure. But if it does work out, then he's a success.
But aren't most of us going to feel the crunch of all these various taxes? Because they all happen at a very fast clip, and we weren't really thinking about it. And then all of a sudden, there's a bunch of extra taxes to pay.
Yeah, there are. The income tax, I said, is not going to be going up that much for most people.
Wasn't there a beer and alcohol tax that was also passed?
Oh, boy. You know, this is a huge... They dumped this budget on us like Friday at noon, and there's still, but we were talking this morning, there's a little pay raise for the legislators in there.
$1,500?
$1,600.
$1,600?
Which, you know, given they haven't had a raise since 2008, it's about, you know, 1% or 2% since 2008. It's not outrageous, but it's one of those things that you just kind of like, oh, really? You find this out? I didn't know that.
But who wouldn't vote themselves a raise? If it was up to you to vote yourself a raise, how would you justify
They haven't for a long time. Every year they vote it down because they know how poorly it plays.
Yeah.
You wouldn't vote yourself a raise if you had to face the voters and say, why did you vote yourself a raise, Bill Leff?
Right.
So, but then you don't. So
true. Eric, thanks for coming up.
Great
it's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune or listen to the Mincing Rascals.
Oh, that's the fabulous
The popular podcast. Coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.